whatever grade you got. Okay, whatever grade you got. Here's our passage for tonight. Therefore, an overseer must be not violent, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. In general, we're talking about two overall qualifications. One has to do with their temper. There are two or three different qualifications that have to do with temper. So we'll talk about that first. And then there's this thing about not being a lover of money. So we're talking about two different ideas. One is keeping guard over your emotions, and the other is not being covetous. And we see that described with various words, both in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1. So walk through these passages with me. We're going to see an elder has to control his temper, and an elder can't be greedy or he can't be covetous. In the King James Version, the passage says a bishop must be no striker, and that's literally what the word means. He doesn't hit people. No striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, and lucre is money, and not a brawler, not covetous. And the ASV says the bishop, therefore, must be no striker, not contentious, no lover of money. Now let's go over to Titus 1 and read verse 7, or from verse 7. For an overseer, as God's steward, must not be quick-tempered or violent or greedy for gain. And the King James Version says a bishop must be not soon angry, no striker, not given to filthy lucre. For the bishop must be, in the American Standard Version, it says the bishop must be not soon angry, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre. So those are our ideas for tonight. No striker, no brawler, not quick-tempered on the one hand, not hot-headed, we'll see in a minute. But then the other is that we're discussing not greedy for filthy lucre, not, you might say, not covetous, not materialistic, not given over to money. Okay? So first let's talk about that first set of qualifications having to do with his temper. Not a striker. That word literally means not a bruiser, not one who is with a blow. He can't be a pugnacious, contentious, quarrelsome person. And that would not be a pleasant person to be around, would it? Pugnacious, quick-tempered. You never know what he's going to do, because if you say the wrong thing, you might set him off. And you never know what the consequences of that might be, because he doesn't have a real good control over his temper. An elder can't be that way. It means not pugnacious, according to another lexicon, not a bully. We hear a lot about bullying today, and I think some of that's probably overplayed. I think kids I was around just like to scuffle and have fun, and now they're maybe labeled as a bully and things. But at any rate, this is real bad bullying. He can't be a bully. He can't push people around to get his way. That's the idea. Not a brawler. That's one of the words. It means abstaining from fighting, or more broadly, not contentious. It means peaceable. It refers to not looking for a battle. Aren't you aware of some people who just seem to always be looking for a fight? In some way or another, they want to be involved in some kind of contention. They're always going at it with somebody, not because they need to defend the truth, but because they just like being in arguments all the time. And they like to win them. And they will enforce their will on you and intimidate you and put you down in order to show their superiority to you. There are some people who have that personality, and of course that would be a disaster if one of those persons were made an elder. No striker or brawler. Now here's a passage on this. You know, what we like to do with all these qualifications is we like to show what it means first, and then we like to look for examples in the Bible where we might see how it plays out if somebody has this or doesn't have this qualification. And here's one in Acts 23 and verse 2. I wonder if this was what Paul had in mind when he put down that an elder can't be a striker. I wonder if he was remembering when the Jewish leader, the chief of the Sanhedrin, had him struck on the face. I don't know. But that was just when Paul was giving a defense. That's a very interesting chapter in Acts chapter 23 and verse 2. And Paul then said to that high priest, he says, God will smite you, you whitewashed wall. And then somebody told Paul that that was the high priest. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know he was the high priest. And he was thinking about a passage in Exodus 22 which condemns speaking ill or cursing the appointed leader of God. And so he backed off of that when he realized who it was. But he probably remembered the high priest had him struck on the face. And of course, Jesus was struck as well. Now, James 4:1, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? Now, James is looking at a congregation in the first century, many congregations really, but think about congregations where there are fights among the people. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are physical blows between the people, but there is always, it seems in some churches, some kind of contention. And very often, it's not because there's somebody who's standing for some false doctrine and somebody else who's opposing them and trying to get rid of it. Very often, it's just because somebody has a personality that looks for a fight. I remember one church where I was a member at one time, it seemed like there was always some kind of a weird quarrel. And that was just because there were certain people who just felt like they had to have their way on every matter of judgment. And if they didn't get their way, they were going to cause trouble. And that's this kind of pugnacious attitude that would be outlawed by these prohibitions for the elders. Comments or questions on that? Fights in the church, that's a very sad thing. And I hope none of us is ever guilty of causing a fight in the church unnecessarily. Okay, why not a striker or a brawler? Can you think of reasons, in other words, why this would be such a serious matter that it would be listed among the qualifications for elders? Well, I can think of some, and you may want to add to this list. We'll go over some. But one thing is that each elder in the eldership has to feel free to speak his mind. Elders, of course, are different in their personalities. We've said that before. Some elders are just more loquacious than others. Some elders are just, they use more words than other people do. And so they may be liable to talk more. But the other elders in the room, even if they're quieter in their personalities, they've got to feel free to express their opinion. Otherwise, what do you wind up with? You wind up with an eldership that's ruled by the loudest person, or you might wind up with an eldership that's ruled by two or three guys who just push the other elders around because their personalities are so strong. And when the other elders speak up their mind, speak their opinion, the louder elders shout them down and just overcome them with the power or the force of their personalities and don't let them get a word in edgewise. And so if there's ever any disagreement of judgment, one elder just basically verbally pushes the other elder down. It can't be that way, because then you don't have the eldership as God designed it. You don't have each elder being subject to the other elders. But of course, a good eldership, a biblical eldership, has to be that way. It has to be that each of the elders is subject to the other elders, to the group of elders, because otherwise you've got a bishop over the rest of them, you see? But if one elder has this pugnacious striker personality, and it gets to where every time another elder expresses a different judgment, he lashes out at him and cuts him and hurts him verbally, well then, it's likely that before too long, that elder with the quieter personality is just going to get used to that and not express his dissenting judgment, even if he has some wisdom that needs to be heard. Does that make sense? Okay. Leaders cannot command respect by brute force. Remember in Numbers 12 and verse 3, we read about Moses being what? The meekest man in all the earth. That is, he recognized that Israel's welfare was not a matter of his own personal aggrandization. He recognized that the cause was bigger than just himself. And so as he did take charge, and he led, and he commanded Israel, at the same time, he was meek about it. That is, he was not doing it for his own gain, for his own notoriety, or something like that, or for his own benefit. He was doing it as a servant. So he was a servant leader. And he didn't command Israel just by being the loudest, or being the one who exercised the most force. No, God spoke through him, and his attitude also won the respect of the people. You don't ever respect anybody just because you're afraid he can beat you up. You might be afraid he can beat you up, but you respect him if he has a character that you admire. Isn't that true? Okay. Comments or questions about that? Okay, one cannot follow the example of Christ and be looking for a fight. Somebody read that. for me. How about that? How about 1 Timothy chapter 2? This is where when Christ was crucified, or when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. It says, when he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. That's right after verse 22 says, he committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. So this is where Jesus put into practice what he said when he said, if anyone smites you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Jesus did not strike back. And it's very tempting, I guess, for many of us to respond with some kind of offense with punching back. But elders can't be like that. They cannot be people who get revenge. But a pugnacious person who is wanting to always pick a fight, he'll be looking for a way to get revenge every time. People do not like to be around threatening personalities. And 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 3 says that those Christians in the first century were fleshly, they were carnal, and so that means they were looking out for their own desires. And sometimes people, when they are that way, are willing to run over other people, and if elders are that way, the flock won't want to be around them. You don't want to be around somebody who is always insisting on his own way. You can't be friends with somebody like that. You can't have a good relationship with somebody who is just unbending about getting his own way all the time. And so that would be characteristic of somebody who has this brawler, striker, fighter mentality. What else? What would you add to this list? Why it's important for an elder not to be a striker or a brawler or somebody who is... He's got to set a good example. So here's a good thing. Whenever we look at these qualifications, we have got to say, if the congregation starts to behave just like the eldership does, what will the congregation be like? And I think that's true with all of them, except maybe the ones about he's got to be married and things like that. But about the personality ones or the character ones, with all of those, we could say, do you want a church that acts like your elders? And then say, why do you think they won't act like their elders? Have you ever heard someone say the church can only go so far as the leadership goes? Or a church can only be as successful as her leaders will let it be? And if the elders don't have a Christ-like attitude, then you wouldn't expect the people to, because they're looking to their leaders. Good point. What else? This is where you get extra participation points, you know. You get extra. Okay? Let's go on then. What about not soon angry? This is another one. Not soon angry. This means not prone to anger, not irascible. It means not soon angry in Strong's. It means hot-headedness or not having hot-headedness. It means not wrathful. Okay, you know people who are hot-headed, don't you? You know what it's like to be around somebody who can't control his temper. Why not? Why is it very important for an elder to be not soon angry? And again, you may want to add to this list, but an easily angered elder is unapproachable, because very often you're going to want to talk to an elder about a concern you have. Well, it may be a concern about something going on in the church. It may be a concern about something going on in your own life. It may be a concern about a decision the elders have made. I mean, a concerned Christian, a member of the church, ought to be able to go to the elders and say, listen, I'm struggling to understand why we did such and such. What was the decision? Can you help me with understanding the rationale behind this? Well, if an elder's hot-headed, he's liable to say, what do you mean, questioning my authority? You know, get away from me. I don't like to be questioned. And it might make him mad, and he might lash out or something like this. Well, that'd be disastrous, wouldn't it? How long would a flock be able to genuinely follow an eldership that just gets mad at the drop of a hat like that? I don't think it'll be very long. What about this? One who is soon angry is not mature enough to take seriously some biblical admonitions. The Bible is so strong about not getting angry. And let's think about some of those passages. For example, Proverbs 17, a man of quick temper acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. Well, do you want foolish elders? You certainly don't. You got to make sure they're not getting losing their temper. Don't people make bad decisions when they lose their temper? I mean, there are so many things we regret later. We regret saying them because we lost our temper. And we wish we could go back and unsay those words. But you can't do that, can you? How about, let's see. Oh, I didn't mean to make us go through that. But anyway, Proverbs 14:29. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. So again, the Proverbs writer is saying, if you can't control your temper, you are foolish. You're immature. And of course, the whole thing about elders being older is they're supposed to be mature. That's the point of them being older guys, is that they are supposed to have lived past the age where they might be so tempted to lose their temper. But some people never outgrow it, do they? Old men sometimes struggle with losing their temper. Okay? How about Proverbs 15:18? A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Well, now notice that. When there's contention in the church, what do you need? You need a man who is slow to anger, slow to wrath. Because sometimes when there's contention in the church, it might be that there's this faction over here. I'm sorry, I'm pointing to you guys. There might be this faction over here that they're getting real riled up about something. And here comes this wave of concern, this wave of bad feelings. And these people over here are starting to think, well, we don't like this. We don't like, there's rumbling, there's grumbling going on. And what needs to happen when they come to the elders or when they come to one of the elders? There needs to be a calming effect. Because here's a guy who doesn't let his temper get away from him. He's very level-headed. Then you've heard it said that level heads need to prevail. And when some conflict comes up in the church, level heads need to prevail. Not somebody who says, hey, I think we need to make a bigger sound out of this. Or, I hate you all for bringing this up and I'm going to shout you down. Or something like that. Level heads. Okay. Now how about Proverbs 19:11? Good sense makes one slow to anger. And it is his glory to overlook an offense. So good sense. Does this mean that an elder can't ever be angry? No. How would you prove that from the Bible? Okay, Ephesians 4:28, I believe, says, be ye angry and sin not. So it's possible to be angry. Did Jesus ever get angry? He did. So what we're looking for is an elder who can have righteous indignation, an elder who can recognize trouble and head it off, and who is emotionally invested in right being done. I mean, he's serious about us doing the right thing, but he is slow to anger. That is, he doesn't let his emotions carry him away. He can be emotional about the truth, and he can be angry when there's false teaching, but he doesn't let that take him away to lead him to do things he might regret later on. Somebody can be angry without sinning. Somebody can get real emotional about something without letting that cause him to do what's wrong. He can still be in control. Of course, God is also many, many times in the Bible we read about the wrath of God and the anger of God. And that's not precisely the same thing as human anger, but at least it shows us the signal that anger as such is not wrong. If God is regularly being characterized as being angry with something or somebody, that would show us anger itself is not wrong. Very good. Now, how about Luke 15:28? But he was angry and refused to go in. Who are we talking about in Luke 15:28? Who was angry and refused to go in? The elder brother. I have read right over that many times, that phrase, he was angry. But it looks like he didn't go in because he just got so angry at this idea of them having a celebration for his brother that really his letting his emotions carry him away, that was part of what made his response so disastrous. And Jesus used that. Remember, what was the point of that parable about the prodigal son? It was about how the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders were treating Jesus when he went and taught to sinners. And their attitude toward Gentiles and their attitude toward sinners was all wrong. They weren't concerned about their salvation. They were concerned about their own power, and they opposed Jesus. And so he told this story about a sinner who comes home and the value of a soul. And he pictures those Pharisees in the mold of the elder brother losing their tempers about this. Okay? One more. One who cannot control his temper probably will be rearing his children to be angry. Ephesians 6:4, of course, says, don't provoke your children to wrath. And if a father is provoking his children to wrath, he's not going to meet the other qualification that we'll talk about next week about handling his household affairs well, ruling well his own house. So it's going to be very hard for a wrathful person to meet that other qualification. Good. Now, I brought this up because there was a man who shot his lawnmower one time named Keith Walandowski. He was charged with felony possession of a short-barreled shotgun and a misdemeanor disorderly conduct because he shot his lawnmower. He got so mad at it. And he said, "I can do that. It's my lawnmower and my yard, so I can shoot it if I want." Now, is that an elder? I certainly hope not. I certainly hope not. If he can get that mad at a lawnmower, think about how mad he's going to get when somebody in the church is not acting right. He might really lose it. He might even be in the right position. I mean, think about the analogy between this lawnmower guy and an elder who is in the right, technically, he's in the right position in terms of opposing what this person is doing or opposing what this person is teaching. He's just not responding in the right way. So this guy is right to think that his lawnmower ought to work right, and he wished his lawnmower worked right. He's just, he's not responding in the right way, is he? Okay, suppose we have a guy like this who is doing this to somebody out in the foyer. Maybe a visitor, maybe a Bible class teacher who is really letting somebody have it. And we observe this. Is that a person we are going to be really taken seriously as a candidate to be an elder? I was hearing a story about somebody who they just saw blessing out somebody in the lobby of the church building. I mean, kids can see that. Everybody can see it. Wouldn't that be a disaster? But there are sometimes elders, there are appointed elders who just don't meet this qualification. So we got to be careful about that. How about an elder who pouts? You think there are elders who pout? And when they don't get their way in an elders meeting, they let that carry over to the next elders meeting? And this is part of that pugnacious, they're brawlers in the sense that they're fighters. So when you offend them, they're going to hold on to that for a long time. And they, when they get angry, they're liable to not let that anger fizzle out because they're not the slow to anger type. Usually if somebody's slow to anger, he's very quick to let it go. But here's somebody who is liable to hold on to that and just pout. So he's a brawler. Yes. So dissatisfied. This is a good point. She said they're liable to speak to others about the situation. Suppose a person is pouting. You can tell, can't you? You can really tell if somebody is so unhappy about something. And somebody says, just innocently says, "What is wrong? Are you okay? What's the matter?" Are they going to tell what it was? They probably shouldn't. But if they have this fighter mentality and they're offended, they're liable to say, "You know, if I spread this around about the other elders, look at how I can be elevated. It'll be like I'm tattling on them. One elder tattling on the others." Wouldn't that be a tragic thing? But this could happen if they're not qualified. Okay, how about not covetous or greedy? Are you ready to switch to that one? We've talked for a while about the attitude of not being in control of your emotions and having a confrontational attitude. What else? What would you add to that? I know we could talk a long time about that. Yes. Let's go. That's right. So give yourself a chance to cool off. That's wise to know that you need that, though. It's why, isn't it showing wisdom to say, "I need to back off of this because I'm liable to say something now that I would regret later." So an elder is the kind of person who knows to do that. Don't you hear about these people who, famous people very often, embarrass themselves to no end on Twitter? Some of y'all may not know what Twitter is, but those of you who do, it's where you can enter a brief text and anybody can contact you on Twitter, and it's public, so anybody can see it. But very famous people will get attacked on Twitter and they respond just like that. So I might just Joe Schmo out here might say something and they just respond with some kind of anger right away. And some celebrities are noted for doing that. And they say ridiculous things. And then they get on there and apologize later because they recognize, and it's probably their agents have to tell them, look, if you keep doing that, nobody's going to hire you to do anything because people are going to think they can't even work with you. And the same kind of thing could happen if somebody is not slow to anger, because they might really say something that hurts the whole situation. Very good. What else? Russell? That's right, that God is patient, and certainly that has to be. Actually, we have patient as part of next week's lesson, I believe. Or gentle. We have gentle as part of next week. So that will factor in there. Very good. What else? Absolutely. And that would be part of those qualifications like blameless, those kind of blanket qualifications of good report, those things that just say, talk generally about an elder being a faithful Christian. And that also would help our patience and not losing our tempers and things like that. So prayer is definitely part of it. An elder who didn't pray would be not much of an elder. That's right. What else? Okay, not covetous or greedy. It literally means not fond of silver. It means not loving money. It means without covetousness. And I would just summarize all that by saying it's an unholy desire for gain, that you are too fixated on money. You might say in some way that it is seeing money as an end and not merely as a means to a greater end. When you start to just really desire money rather than desiring to save souls and wanting to use whatever resources we have in order to do that. And so an elder can't be greedy. The Bible condemns it very strongly. If there is a sin that is more roundly condemned in the Bible, that is most ignored in the churches of Christ today, covetousness might be it. Because the Bible is so strong on it, and yet we don't preach about it very much, perhaps. We may not talk about it. We may not be as aware of it. But the Bible's strong on it. For example, this is when Jethro is telling Moses to appoint the judges underneath him, the various judges. He's instituting a judicial system in Israel. And he's telling Moses who to appoint. And he says, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers. How about 1 Timothy 6:10? For the love of money, you know this, is the root of all kinds of evils. So if you want a lot of different kinds of evils growing up in the church, then I'd say appoint some elders who love money. And then you will have untold problems springing from that. How about Colossians 3:5? Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. Included in that list of things that have to be put to death in Christians is covetousness, which is idolatry. You wouldn't want to put somebody in the eldership who worshiped a false god, would you? Can you imagine putting somebody in the eldership who worshiped Baal, or somebody in the eldership who worshiped Vishnu, or somebody who worshiped Allah? You wouldn't do that. But here in Colossians 3:5, it says covetousness is idolatry. So he's sinning, he's committing idolatry by being covetous just as surely as if he were worshiping some false god. How about 1 Corinthians 6:10? In the list of people that Paul says cannot inherit the kingdom of God, included in that are people who are greedy. So you wouldn't want to appoint somebody who's an elder who's not himself going to inherit the kingdom of God, but if he's greedy, he would not be. How about Hebrews 13:5? It says, keep your life free from the love of money or covetousness. And of course, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not covet, the last of the Ten Commandments. And he gives a list of things you shouldn't covet of your neighbors. So it's very fundamental in the life of a God-fearing person that he doesn't have an inordinate desire for material things. But so many Christians today are materialistic, aren't they? They organize their lives around trying to amass more and more stuff. And an elder Can't be that way. It might manifest itself in various dangerous ways. And you might think of a lot of different ways in which an elder would manifest covetousness if he were that way. But for one thing, trickery and deception. Just about, I guess, the first thing that a covetous person will do that's damaging to the church is he will try to think of conniving ways in order to get more money. That might be one of the first things, if he really loves money. Now, in Colossians 3:9, it says, that's the one that says, do not steal from one another. Isn't that right? Or does it say do not? It says do not lie to one another. Another verse says stealing. It says do not lie to one another. So trickery or deception. What about, for example, when a man sells a used car to someone? If he's honest, when the person says, are there any problems with the transmission? Are there any problems with the brakes? Or how many miles does this car have on it? A deceitful person, a person who's covetous, is liable to fudge on that and say something that's not really true or keep something concealed that he really ought to tell him when it might hurt him in the deal. But he still ought to be honest about it. You can think of many cases. What about deceiving the IRS, for example? Do you know the IRS has a fund they call the Conscience Fund? Have you heard about that? The IRS has a fund where people send back money after they've cheated on their taxes and haven't been caught because they feel so guilty about it, it just overcomes them. I need to get you the statistics. Maybe I can remember to bring them later. The statistics on the Conscience Fund is still operative. It started a number of years ago when somebody sent in a check and said, I cheated on my taxes, please accept this as a remuneration for that. And then they thought, well, let's make a fund for this and we'll publicize it, and then maybe more and more people will send back money that they cheated us out of. And it happens. People send it back. So it may be that an elder is involved in something like that. Shouldn't be. Should be somebody who's not greedy who would let that get away from him. What about stealing? Romans 2:21 says, if you preach that people shouldn't steal, do you steal? And so Christians obviously are people who don't steal from one another. Paul said, let him who stole do what? Steal no more. And so an elder might be tempted to take things if he's greedy for money. And an elder, remember, has control over the money. Almost in all circumstances, an elder has easy access to the funds in the church. And you don't need an elder who's going to misapply those funds, right? How about cheating on income tax? I mentioned that a minute ago. But 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 8 is a passage right before Paul gives that list of people who can't inherit the kingdom of God. In verse 8, he says, you are defrauding one another. That is, he accuses members of the church of defrauding one another. And that might happen if you put somebody in a leadership position who is greedy for filthy lucre. And that's lucre at its filthiest, when you would trick somebody in order to get the money. Now, filthy lucre, of course, just means ill-gotten gain. It means money that you got in a way that you shouldn't have gotten it. So money from stealing, money from embezzlement, money from gambling, money from where you lied to somebody to get the money, any kind of those things, that would be ill-gotten gain, or that would be filthy lucre. And so somebody who's covetous, who has an inordinate desire for money, would be in that category. How about, we'll get through this. What about misplaced priorities? 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 1 is where Paul's talking to the Corinthians, and he says, I want to talk to you as spiritual people, but I can't because you're fleshly, or you're still wrapped up in the desires of this world, and so your priorities are mixed up. An elder who's appointed, who's covetous, has his priorities mixed up. What about weak giving? 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7, of course, says that God loves a cheerful giver. Somebody who's covetous can't obey that command, can't give cheerfully, because he wants all that money for himself. An elder has to be somebody who's fully invested, and that means he's a good giver. Why do many churches struggle with giving? It may be because the elders don't give in some churches. If the congregation sees that the elders don't give liberally, why should they feel like they should give liberally? Now, they ought to read the Bible and learn it, but it's very hard when your leaders don't give you a good example in that. This is a picture of one of my old friends, Flavel Nichols. And you remember his father, probably. You've heard his father's name, Gus Nichols. Great gospel preacher in the South. And I'm sure he preached around here at some point, but it's been years and years. Flavel is his son, a preacher, and he's very old now. And it's sad to say he's lost his ability to preach. His mental faculties are leaving him now. But he was a great gospel preacher. And I knew him even when I was a kid. Now, one time Brother Nichols was at a gospel meeting. He got there, I think, the day before the meeting was supposed to start. And somebody met him and brought him to the house where he was supposed to stay during the meeting. And the man told him, he said, "Now, we're a poor church." And this was in the 40s. He said, "We're a poor church, and we cannot afford the grape juice for eating the Lord's Supper." And Brother Nichols told him, "Well, you stopped on the way here to buy some cigars and some chewing tobacco. So why don't y'all have enough money to buy the grape juice?" Well, the Brother Nichols, before the meeting started the next day, walked 4 miles to a grocery store where they sold a 50-cent bottle of grape juice so that they could worship scripturally the next day. He brought the grape juice and they did it. At the end of the meeting, that man, I think it was the same man, came to him and gave him a little baggie that had 36 cents in it. And he said, "I'm sorry, this isn't much, but this is all the money that we've collected in the contribution since last year's gospel meeting." Well, Flavel knew that wasn't true because Flavel had put a dollar in there himself on Sunday morning. And so here we have an elder or a leader in the church lying to the visiting preacher about the amount of money that they had in the budget just so that they could keep some for themselves. And they wouldn't even buy the grape juice for the Lord's Supper. Now, that was in the 40s, so the money's a little different, but still, such deception. Now, things like that are liable to happen in the church. Maybe not on the same level or with the exact same kind of illustration, but elders who are covetous are liable to deceive and things like that over money. Must not do that. Okay, we mentioned these. How about compromises in doctrine? In Revelation 3 and verse 17, we read about the church at Laodicea, and they thought they were rich, the passage says. But then what does John say about them? They're pitiable, they're poor, and they're naked. And what he's saying there is not literally with physical things are they destitute. He's saying spiritually you're bankrupt. You think you're rich, and you may be rich in physical things, but spiritually you're bankrupt. And there may be elders who are very well-to-do in terms of monetary things because they're covetous. And they might even take that as a sign that God is blessing them. There is a sense with many people in our culture that if I'm rich, if I'm doing real good in terms of worldly goods, well, God's smiling on me. That shows that I'm right with God. And that goes, you know what that goes back to, by the way? It goes back to the Puritans who came over here and were Calvinists. And Calvinists teach, you know, that there are certain people who are elected to be saved before they're born and other people who are elected to be damned. The question then is, if you're a Calvinist, how do you know which you are? How do you know if God has foreordained you to be saved or lost? Well, one way you can tell, a lot of people assume, is if God blesses you monetarily. So if I've got a nice big house, if I've got a nice car to drive, well, that might show that God has elected me, that God has picked me. Now, of course, you all who know the Bible know that's not true. But an elder might start to slip into that way of thinking, where if I'm doing real well financially, then that shows that God's on my side. But that's a covetous way of thinking, isn't it? That's a materialistic way of thinking. Okay, I think that's all of the slides for tonight, but we have a minute or two for comments because the kids haven't come in. I've probably talked too much. What would you add about that? Kids haven't come in, so until I see children, we can keep commenting.